asked him, and usually you would give me a slip first, but he kept me, and I started somebody coming up. So after the last run out, he says, "How are you Saturday afternoon?" I said, "I told you where I was going, up to Northwire, New Hampshire, and that's where I went." "Well," he says, "hereafter, when it's Saturday afternoon or holiday, when there's work to be done," he says, "ye fellas are going to do it." And I don't know why, just I want feeling good. I said, "Listen, here's one of ye fellas that ain't going to do it." I said, "Ye just like he put his feet down." He said, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" I said, "I'm giving you just 2 weeks' notice and I'm done." "Well," he says, "you don't need to get mad." I said, "No, but I'm leaving before I do." And, well, he looked kind of strange and said a few words, passed me out a list of part of gold and delivered some sinners. And, well, I had given 2 weeks' notice. And you know, the next morning he says, "I've been thinking over," he says, "you wouldn't be deprived of all your holidays and Saturday afternoons," he says, "if you want to stay." I said, "No," I said, "I've made my mind up." And he spoke to me several times. One time he says, "You know, I decided," he says, "that I'll raise your pay a little bit." I said, "My dad told me one time, change a pasture and made fat cattle." I said, "I'm going to try it." And so I got through, and I come home and took a vacation. And then I went back, and I didn't know what I was going to do. But in the meantime, I got pretty well acquainted with the superintendent of the electric company. In fact, the company played cards sometimes, and Gertrude and I used to go and play with them, like Pat and his wife, the superintendent. So that night, after I come home from Vermont on a vacation, we were married and had an apartment. Gertrude said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "Oh, I'll find something." And I went over to see Ike that evening, and I told him I'd got through. And he says, "Well, I wondered how long you'd put up with that feller taking advantage of you." He says, "He's a good foreman of the company, but," he says, "his old people," he says, "he takes advantage of them, makes them work extra." I said, "Well," I told him the story. I said, "I'd like to get a job with the electric company on the line, be a lineman." He says, "Right now we aren't hiring anybody," but he says, "you wait a few days," and he says, "let me have your phone number. See what I can do," he says. "I know what you've done," he says, "for the last couple of years." And so, all right. So I went that next morning, took my car, went around, I went to a Ford garage on the Common and Lynn. Went in and I told him I was looking for a job. They asked me what I'd been doing. I told him I'd been working for Pat Higgins. "Oh yes, we know, we've had some fillings, yeah." "Well, what can you do? You're a mechanic." I said, "Not really. I tinkered some, but not much. But," I said, "I'll do anything." And he said, "How'd you happen to get through?" And I said, "Well, holidays and Saturday afternoons on a salary don't work good." So ended up making story short, they said, "Well, if you want to come in and wash cars, we'll hire you for it." I said, "Okay, I don't know how long it's going to be, but," I said, "I'll do it." So I went in, I worked a little over a week washing cars when I got word from Mike Patton to come to his office on the Lynn Gas Electric Company. So I went down to see him, and I was hired right off, and I gave them a notice, and I went to work for the Lynn Gas Electric Company. And Ike told me, he says, "I can't put you out on the line at first," because he said, "we aren't putting anybody out right now," but he says, "in a few days something will happen," he said, "I'll get you." So he says, "if you want to work, I'll put you out in the pole yard, trimming knots on light poles and painting poles and doing that kind of stuff." So I said, "I don't care what I do," so that's what I did. And a few days, one of the line foremen on a truck come and said to the old Civil War veteran there, old Judd, he says, "you got a fellow here by the name Floyd Fuller?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I want to meet." Well, the old Judd was kind of mad because I knew how to use an axe and trim knots. And a lot of the city boys, he had to show them how to. And he took his axe when I went to work. He said, "Can you trim knots?" I said, "I want to show you how to do it." He turned one, and he passed the axe over to me, and I took it on a nod, and I attributed it to Dub, just good job. He said, I don't need to show you anymore. Well, he was madder than the old Harwin. He said, I get a good man, he said, and you come take him away. He said to the Angus boss, Amos Mules. And so I went out, then I went to work doing groundwork on the pole, then I started climbing, doing work up on the pole, but I had to quit that because my back had a bad back. I hurt it when I was a kid. And it always bothered me some, and so I had to wear a brace some of the time.
How'd you hurt it?
Huh?
How'd you hurt it as a kid?
Foolishly, with my brother Claren, 4 years older, sitting on the floor and putting their feet together and have a broom handle and pull and see which one you could raise out on the floor. Of course, he had advantage, but this one day I was pretty cardio, I threw my shoulders, and then I lifted him up. When I did, something let go of my back, and I keeled over on the floor and fainted away, so my mother told me. And from that time on until back here in the 30s, when I got hold of a chiropractor and put that sacroiliac back, and I've got a pretty good back now. But, so anyway, so I couldn't do so late. Vacation time, they put me to drive in the line, different line trucks, so let the truck driver take a vacation. I drove, because I'd been driving trucks, and I was a good truck driver. And so I drive. So when I got through, each one had taken his vacation. I don't know how this ever happened, because I was young. I called in the main office one morning, and Frank Finnegan was the general foreman on the line department. He kept me in, he told the other bosses what sent them out to do, and he kept me in there. And it was, the drivers had all back, see. He says, we've had a big meeting up to the Exchange Street, and we're making some changes. And he says, everything is going to be streamlined. He says, if you'll use an Irishman, do if you know what I mean. He says, each certain ones are going to do a certain thing, specialize. Like doctors today, you know. So he says, I'm appointing you as foreman. There's a truck over in such a garage. And he says, your job is to, now I ain't been there only from May, see. Your job is gonna be in charge of setting new poles. And he says, I'm giving you 4 ground men and 1 lineman to climb a pole when you get them set. So I was appointed foreman just like that. And so I worked there. That's what I was doing till they put the white way in, which I'll tell you about. And so I was in charge of setting poles. And this is, and of course we hadn't a hand that like, and so, well, you know, it's kind of funny how the companies do different things. I got called in the office after I'd been doing it a while, and Finnegan had been a foreman on one of the big line trucks for a while. They had 12 or 14 men on it. It's a big company. They covered Lynn, Swampscott, and Nahant. And he said he got pushed up, so he was a foreman in the office. He called him this morning, he called me, and he says, say, Fuller, the head ones up the office don't like your reports. I said, what's wrong? Well, some days, I had little slip, peak slips, turn them in as I set the poles. Some days, he says, you set 3-4 poles. The next day, he says, you maybe set 5 or 6. They can't understand why you don't set the same number of poles every day. Well, that's a disgusting thing to me, that was. And I said, look, Frank, I called him Frank. You worked on the line long enough, I said, you could answer that question. I said, you know darn well, when you're up on the highlands on the rocky territory, you don't dig as many holes you do when you're holding a hand and nothing but sand. And if you have to blast to get a hole in, I said, it takes time. Well, then he kind of shook his head and grinned. He says, well, you've got to do something about it to please them up there. They've got this streamlined and they want, okay, I ain't so dumb to look. When I had a good day and set 6-7 poles, I only turned in for 4. Kept the other slips in my pocket. Have a bad day, it was hard digging, and like I dig out some of them old ones, turn them in. When I got through over there, I had I had a lot of good deeds. I had to turn in a lot of them. But they were happy ever afterwards. But the job that pleased me the most, and last year, the General Electric had it on the television, showing the General Electric playground lighted up to play baseball. The first time there ever a playground lighted to play at night. Did you ever see that or hear it?
I think Earl told me that you had done the field.
Well, while I was in charge of setting pole, I went in one morning and Finnegan says, I got a good job for you, Fuller. I said, what? There's 8 55-foot chested poles up in the yard. 6 inches at the top end and the butts. And chested is heavy. He said, you've got to take him up to the General Electric playgrounds and set those poles. And he had a paper drawn on a chart. I've got to set carnoids on the corners. He said, they've got to be exactly 8 foot apart. And they cut gains, notching them to put the cross arms, bolt them in the all board, and then like pull and take them out. And he said, they got to be set so it's 8 foot apart, so he put an 8 foot cross arm, bolt it to it, and build a platform. Put floodlights on. So those poles, he said, have got to be exactly 8 foot for the cross arms. And 2 in each corner, that's 8 of them. And also, he says, I want those set so that those gains will be level. So when they put a cross arm on, the platform won't tilt. One pole a little higher than the other. Well, now, you know, that kind of made me think, how the hell am I going to, when you get a pole down. And also the pole got to be set 7 foot in the ground, 7 foot deep. Well now, if you don't think that's a job, dig a hole 7 foot deep with a shovel and bars, some job.
Yeah.
Well, right. I never asked any bosses any questions. So I went, and I said, oh yeah, I said, well, I took a sheet. I said, when I get them hole dug, I've got to have some help to, because we had to pike them up with pike poles by hand. Today they've got derricks and post hole diggers and everything. Well, he said, when you get the hole dug, he says, you call in. And he says, I'll send another truck up with his gang and help you and set them on end, he says. And then he says, all you'll do with them is stand them up in the hole. And then he says, let them go. And he says, you chew them up and set them where you want, or he said, and tap them in. So that's what I did. We took the poles up there and we dug the night digging sandy. And I set them poles. And during while they were digging, I said, don't get down one pole. Jesus Christ, he says, Fuller, this is getting hard. Of course, them long handled pole, little scoop on them. I said, well, I thought a good way to do it. I said, you get down on your knees. And I said, you load that and then overhand, bring it up, and another fellow will take here and take it away and pick it out and dump it and pat it back to you. And that's the way we dug those 8 holes. And then when he got ready to set them up, we took all the little bar, long bar, turned around the back of the hole, and took can dogs and put the pole up against the bar so it wouldn't cave the side in. And then they pick up the top end and they had what they call a dead man that I tended. Thing to set on in a crotch and things and rest the end on it to get it up so they could get pike poles in it. And then I was a little worried because them long poles up, if anything happened, somebody get hurt. I was young and nervous. So I put 2 men on each side with the side poles and we set them 8 poles up there as slick as whistle. Not it never happened. And then the other crew left. And then during this time, my mind was wandering. How in the heck am I going to get back and get, see there's 55 footer, but you drop them down 7 feet. You've got 48 feet up there, top of that pole. And you've got to get a long way back to sight to see how that little notch is cut out. See what angle it's in. So I had them take a can dog's and twist it around, got it, and I went way back. And what I thought would be the right angle for the corner, best I could. And then I sighted for straightness, and they shoveled the dirt around it, and I said, tap it awfully good, and they did. When he got it solid, of course the other was just 8 foot away, I said to the lineman I had, I said, put your spurs on, and could you go up top of that pole? He said, what am I going to do up top of that empty pole? Well, I says, you take his spurs. I could got them done, but when you're a foreman, when you just had to be a foreman, you don't climb poles anymore. They take your spurs away from you. I said, you go up there, and I said, hit your belt. And I said, you sight through that gain, that bottom gain, and I'll have the boys turn that other pole, we'll twist it this way and that. And I said, we'll also, I want you to see if it's level. If it isn't, I said, we'll tilt it and chink a little dirt under it, because you had to raise or lower so they'd be exactly, to have them same height, see? So he went up there, and that's what they did. And we set all eight of them, and I was pleased. We got them done, and Finnegan drove up with the car and looked it over, and he says, you've done a good job. And he don't bear out, and he didn't bear out and tell him, but he said, you've done a nice job. And so they put it up. And last summer, I think it was, I came home from somewhere, it was a year ago, don't matter. When I come in here alone, I turn the television on just for, because I don't like being alone. I've been alone for near 8 years now. I turn it on for noise. And if I've been out all day and come into the house, I've been married so many years, an empty house, I got to have something. And I caught the tail end of telling their progress that they made, and that General Electric playground was lighted for the first time that the playground was ever lighted, and they played baseball there. And then showed the few lighted up with the poles and the lights. Oh. And that made me feel pretty darn good. And then from that, while I was during that time, the General Electric and the Lynn Gas Electric Company decided to put in a white way in Lynn, Massachusetts, and have the city the best lighted city in the world. You probably heard about it. And so I was in charge of putting up all the white way poles are metal. And they have a cement bead, they're bolted to it. Well, I was in charge of putting them metal poles up and bolting the arms on and patting the ground. And then when they got that done, the white way had to be trimmed. And so from that to come in the meantime, I don't know why they had it made up special. And I'm going to show you the picture while I'm talking. That's right there.
And there you go. Yeah.
And
look at that.
So they had that thing truck made up purpose. There's no windshield and they see the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And it had hard rubber tires.
Oh my God.
And it run off in batteries. Every night you had to put the battery on the battery charger to charge them up.
Uh-huh.
And when you started out in the morning, it operated like a streetcar with a little wheel to turn the current on. Started out in the morning, full charge, you'd go 10 miles an hour. After you used it during the day, it'd be patterned run down so you'd be creeping in probably about 5 miles an hour. Had a little electric motor in each hind wheel. Here's two bosses there. That's the first day they used it. See, there's two men standing there, but you wouldn't notice it unless you'd land.
Yeah, you see his.
The one took a picture. Here's a metal pole. Mm-hmm. And there's an iron come over and a globe.
Oh, right, yeah.
And see, the white way do not burn bulbs. The carbide stick.
Uh-huh.
And if that stick burns, it leaves a something drops in like a carking cork. And once in so often, you had to go and take that globe off and dump it out and put a new carbide stick in. So they all did. So I had to go into Boston and drive this thing down, all the way in Boston, 10 miles an hour. And then they painted, took it in and put it at your service as their logo. And then, so then, they took me off and set in poles, and I was to trim the white way. And so that's what I did. And you park there and set your brakes and go step a few steps on the platform and pull the safety rail up around you so you wouldn't step off, throw a switch, and you went right up into the air, up in that platform. And then you was right there where I could take your globe off and clean it. Then when you wanted to go to the next light, step out of that platform, one of the seats right up there, and the column went right up through, you could drive to the next pole without coming down.
Oh. That's terrific.
Well, there was quite an audience.
I can imagine.
And you know, that first night, Yeah, this is Exchange Street, but Broad Street is a much wider street where you can drive 8-9 cars or more abreast. That first night, when they turned the lights on, people went out the middle of that street and you could see to read the newspaper. Well, I didn't think anything about it. Lynn Item and the Lynn Telegram, they took pictures, and it was quite right up in the paper. But I was a young guy, I didn't think anything. But I don't know why I didn't buy some of them papers. So, well, you know, after, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I got to talking about this thing, telling people what I did, and that, like, Jeannie Gilman, up to
Wheeling.
She's quite a gal. She thinks a lot of me for some reason. And I was telling her that I'd like to get a picture of that. And so I tried to, I wrote down to the library, but I couldn't get anything satisfaction. She didn't say anything, but the next thing I knew, she invited me up to supper one night. And I went up, and what did she have? That picture in a box.
And
she had that old frame, and she framed it. And I said, Jeannie, how'd you get it? Well, she says, I wrote to the library, and the library referred me to the Historical Society. That picture now is in the Lynn Historical Society.
Oh, isn't that great?
Because they've got a different type, but that was back in 1925, see? So she said, I wrote to the Historical Society, and they said, yes, they could send me a copy of the picture if I sent them some money, and she said I did, and she says, that's your present.
Wow,
was I tickled to see that.
What a great...